It's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying. There is no running, there is no hiding. There's only fighting or dying. It's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying. There is no running, there is no hiding. There's only fighting or dying.
It's Going Down is a digital community center from anarchist, anti-fascist, autonomous, anti-capitalist, and anti-colonial movements. Our mission is to provide an autonomous and resilient platform to publicize and promote revolutionary theory and action.
Go to itsgoingdown.org for daily updates. Check out our online store for ways to donate and rate and follow us on iTunes if you like this podcast. Okay, we're joined here today with somebody from Mutual Aid Disaster Relief. You might remember they were on the show right after Hurricane Irma had hit, and we talked about their community center and free clinic that they had built in Florida. They were about to go to Puerto Rico. The group ended up going to Puerto Rico, ended up doing a lot of great stuff. In 2018, they are actually about to launch a tour of part of the United States, and we're talking today with somebody that's going to go on that tour. So do you just want to introduce yourself real quick for the audience?
Sure. My name is Jimmy Dunson. I'm with Mutual Aid Disaster Relief. Together with about a dozen other people, we all co-founded the network together. And it's, we were just basically, trying to build off of the legacy of Common Ground and occupied iterations, centralized people power disaster response, but also learn from the lessons and not repeat the same mistakes that past iterations have made.
Do you just want to talk a little bit about that? I mean, what do you see as the major lessons that MAD wants to build on? Because, I mean, you all have just done some amazing stuff. I mean, obviously it's in the spirit of Common Ground, which also, did, of course, amazing things. But can you just talk a little bit about what you see as the lessons that are learned, or what does autonomous disaster relief look like in 2018?
Sure. So one way that we're different is we're not being location specific and one disaster specific. We're trying to create the groundwork and support people power disaster responses across space and time wherever they occur, because this disaster, capitalism, and climate chaos is not going away, and neither should we. A couple of the major lessons in Common Ground, we had what Rachel Luft, a scholar, called disaster patriarchy, and it's basically this term that in the crisis, the values don't matter as much, or the principles are flexible, So there was, instances of sexual violence. There we have Brandon Darby, who got into a position of leadership and abused his position to take advantage of young women, and then came out later on as an FBI informant after he entrapped people. We have just like a general culture of people do the most work possible with the least amount of self-care. And so one thing we learned is, going forward, with our project is we are survivor centric. We listen to and support survivors and have a zero tolerance, policy when it comes to sexual violence. Another thing, is we try to take care of ourselves and each other in the process. So we're much more geared towards emotional, mental, psychological sustainability. And wanting to do this work long term, so avoiding burnout and integrating healing justice in our efforts as well. And another thing, one of the key components is supporting, kind of incubating the spontaneous disaster relief mutual aid projects that spring up. In Houston, West Street Recovery was an awesome example of people local to Houston stepping in, responding to their neighbors and building something beautiful. And we were able to, direct supplies and volunteers that way. With Puerto Rico, we have the CAMS, the Centro Apoyo Mutual Centers, Centers for Mutual Aid. And we've geared a lot of our Puerto Rico efforts to supporting their initiatives, including, you know, taking a water purification system down, a modular water purification system, so that they could take it around to the different CAMS and community centers and rural areas to filter water. And we're working on getting a solar photovoltaic system. We've been in touch with the CAM in Caguas, and hopefully we'll be moving forward with that in the very near future and be able to get some autonomous off-the-grid solar infrastructure to our friends down there.
Can we just get your take on, I mean, what's going on in Puerto Rico right now? The last we heard was that FEMA was actually ending their supplies to the island. It seems that still massive amounts of people are without power and clean water. This crisis is not going away anytime soon. You know, just what do you know about what's going on in the ground, and what is your take on what's happening right now?
So I believe since the last time one of us talked with you all, there's been an explosion in the on-the-ground local organizing by the CAMS, by the Centers for Mutual Aid. And it's, you know, basically oftentimes it started out as, you know, just one person in the community has a propane stove, you know, so they're able to cook, and then neighbors come by, bring mass amounts of food. You know, the older woman cook for everybody. It just naturally, organically evolves into a community center, and people are responding to other things that people need in the community, and all with contextualizing the disaster and the ongoing disasters of social and economic inequality. And so they've been seizing derelict buildings like schools and government buildings and using them as shelters, community centers. And so what we see in Puerto Rico right now is, in the absence of state or large nonprofit relief efforts, the people themselves have organized to meet their own needs. And largely spontaneously, largely without resources or official status of any sort, but able to respond to people's immediate needs in a way that far outshines, you know, the Red Cross or FEMA or any large institutions that most people. Both, yeah, I was in New Orleans after Katrina as well, you know, in Florida after Irma. And from my experience, everywhere we go, whether it's farm worker camps, the projects, trailer parks, wherever we go, folks say, oh, you know, nobody's come here. Y'all are the first people we've seen. And folks in Puerto Rico, the same thing with the mutual aid volunteers, with the community organizers, with the camps. They're hearing the same thing, that everywhere they go, that FEMA hasn't been there, the Red Cross hasn't been there, these large institutions that are supposed to be ubiquitous after a disaster, they're largely absent, or they have one operations center and expect everybody to come to them instead of being responsive to people's self-determined needs.
Right. I mean, what do you see happening in, I mean, just continuing forward, I mean, whether we're talking about Florida, Texas, or Puerto Rico, I mean, it seems like these are both an opportunity, but also a sign of just what's to come. Because as you said, I mean, climate chaos is not going away anytime soon, and neither does, you know, the possibility of, you know, the state kind of coming in and fixing things. If anything, I mean, if you look at Puerto Rico, they've actually, you know, using the logic of, you know, disaster capitalism, have privatized, from my understanding, a large part of the electrical grid in Puerto Rico. So they're actually kind of using the opportunity to do the stuff they want to do. I'm just curious if you can talk about, I mean, you know, as part of a long-term vision, how can these types of ideas, you know, play a part in something autonomous and grassroots?
In the absence of the state or even business as usual, there's space for an alternative vision to come to fruition. So every disaster that happens, we envision powerful, spontaneous, inspirational, autonomous zones that spring up and meet people's needs as they relate to the disaster, but also as they relate to the ongoing invisible disasters that took place before. We see the creation of mutual aid survival programs as a path forward to build our movements for both survival with coming climate change, and as an alternative, building something from below. So there's this term called dual power. So we're at the same time that we're opposing disaster capitalism and the efforts of privatization and government repression. You know, oftentimes we see the militarization of communities after disasters. And so what we're an antidote in building people powered, and that natural response to a disaster is people, the spell of powerlessness is broken. The spell of business as usual is broken. People come out of their houses. They relate to each other as human beings, as you know, before they wouldn't have dreamed it would be possible to come out, and all of a sudden, whatever work you do is meaningful, and you build ties, deep relationships with each other. And rather than a social service model of people coming in and giving tickets and waiting in line and portioning out one can for each person or one packet of water for each person, the natural response is communities helping communities, people helping people. So yes, sometimes folks will go to the nearby supermarket or meat store and get the meat that's going to go bad and have community picnics and for each other, and basically meet each other's needs in a non-hierarchical, horizontal way that is actually very liberating. There's time and time again from, you know, we saw it in New Orleans after Katrina. We saw it in Mexico after the earthquake, both this time and in the 80s. We saw it in New York after Sandy, even going far back as the San Francisco earthquake over 100 years ago. People will respond to each other's needs in the absence of the state. And it's an opportunity at the same time that there's this tragedy that is that shouldn't be downgraded. It's also this possibility, this moment of basically everything that we wish to do all the time, whether it's provide meals to folks that are hungry, or housing for people that are without, or medical care, psychological first aid, you know, all these projects that we want to be doing, solidarity with prisoners, reading rooms, libraries, free libraries. We can be doing these things after a disaster, and they find fertile ground where all these lessons we learned through Food Not Bombs, through Occupy, through Standing Rock, through street medic work, we find a place where they can be deployed, and it's tangible, the feeling in the air that all of a sudden, before we were constricted, there was no space to create something different, and all of a sudden the whole area is fertile ground for new visions with the absence of business as usual.
We're going to talk about the tour in a second, but you know, I got to ask, you know, in your group, What do people think is going to happen this year when hurricane season comes again? I mean, do you think that it'll be just as bad as it was? Or is this something we're going to see like every couple years? Or, I mean, obviously you're going out and training people to engage in disaster relief efforts. But I'm just curious, I mean, you know, in your head, how bad do you think it's going to get, you know, in, you know, this year or in the foreseeable future?
So when we talk about just this year, there's some, you know, I'm not sure about that. You know, there's some fluctuating, you know, obviously we want to be ready this year as much as possible. But the science is clear over the last century and accelerating over the last few decades. Climate change, human-induced climate change, is making these extreme storms increase in intensity and frequency. And that's, you know, from the early 1900s to now, every decade it's increasing exponentially, both in how many disasters and the intensity of the disasters. And that's going to be contained in the near future, too, with wetlands loss, urbanization, the continued, you know, pipeline expansions and fossil fuel, you know, investments or that have been accelerating since Trump took office as well. So there, right now, we're preparing for the worst case scenario, and we want to build power from below, so that when these crises and collapses come, whether those are ecological, economic, political, that we're ready, building an alternative from below. We know they're going to happen. It's just a matter of when. And it's important that we fill the gap and build from below and have something in place that is an alternative to the top-down mainstream models and can offer meaningful participation, authentic involvement for anybody who wishes to play a part in a communal recovery, because that's part of how we cope and heal from disasters, is being part of a communal recovery, a mutual aid process that we're all participated in, not top down, putting blankets in people's hands and then telling them to go away. People who are impacted by disasters have more at stake in their own well-being and survival than givers of aid, and they'll firmly grasp the tools for a communal recovery if given the chance. And oftentimes all we do is set up the work, and then it's the community members themselves that make it happen.
Why a tour? What do you all hope to get out of this tour? I mean, we've kind of hit on this a little bit, but I'm just curious, you know, how did you all come to the conclusion that you were going to embark on this this trek across the United States?
Yeah, so we've done a couple of speaking engagements on a small scale in Florida and done trainings and orientations for new volunteers after Irma and Maria. But so it's basically we have one of the co-organizers who's he's really bottom lining the tour. His name is Tyler. He used to work with the Beehive Collective. They're radical artists, storytellers, and organizers out of Maine. That they did the big Mesoamerica Resist graphics, the coal, the mountaintop coal mining, FTAA, and other large graphic storytelling projects. And he's been on tour with them, and we know this is a project and a movement whose time has come, and that it's going to be more and more needed in the near future. And we want to build capacity. We want more people involved. We want to share power. That's one of the things that makes this approach unique, is the decentralization and horizontality of our movement. The more people are involved, the more people can take initiative and respond to people's self-determined needs. There's plenty of different survival programs that are needed that we can create if we have the people that are willing to take initiative and see it through. So yeah, we're just trying to build the network, spread the word about mutual aid, and hopefully there'll be a lot more folks coming out to the next major disasters, and even these principles that we're applying at these power vacuums of when a disaster strikes, they can also be utilized in our hometowns. So we can use the same approach, the same solidarity, not charity, decentralized, horizontal model of people responses in our in dealing with people's needs there, whether it's folks in the projects and the need for insect control or food, housing, medical care. You know, we can integrate mutual aid programs in our hometowns as well. And so we're, in one sense, we're trying to build the organization and our capacity, but in a much larger sense, it's about the movement. We want to build a movement for mutual aid because we believe that that's a strategically powerful way forward to advance our movements for collective liberation and is needed for our survival in the near future.
So if somebody goes out to one of these events, just in the broad strokes, what all will you be covering? What will they walk away from the event learning?
So it'll vary based on how much time we're able to spend with each community. If possible, we'll spend two days. The first evening will be a interactive Beehive Collective style graphic narration storytelling of disaster capitalism and its alternative people powered disaster response and climate justice from below. And then the next day will be a series of workshops covering solidarity, not charity. What makes this approach different than the top-down charity model? Covering past iterations. I mentioned disaster patriarchy earlier, but what we've learned from previous incarnations and also a little history of mutual aid and also mutual aid in the context of disasters, how it is a role in our movement and community organizing as well, building power from below, different strategies to build in this context, but also things that can be utilized as well. So it's going to be several hours, of workshops, depending on how much time we're given. But we hope to come away with, renewed connections, more established connections with everybody in these different areas and stronger bonds, because that's one thing that is an element of solidarity is connection, is relationships that bind us to each other, is friendship. And so we know that when a disaster hits these communities, those people who are organizing already in those communities are going to be responding. And we want efforts and we want them as prepared as possible to tap into the network as much as they wish. There'll be components about street medic work as well. And then we'll follow up with other organizations that can come back through to give more in-depth street medic trainings, healing justice trainings, or other needs that the community has for more trainings that we can refer folks so that it's just the beginning of a relationship rather than a one-time pass-through kind of thing.
Awesome. Well, this is really inspiring. Can you just give us kind of a rundown of at least geographically where you'll be, where the tour will be going?
Sure. We have dozens of locations. We're going to do a practice run in New Orleans, and then we're going to, the tour will start officially in the beginning of March in Knoxville, go over to Appalachia, go up the Atlantic coast. as far as Connecticut, and then make its way back down to Pennsylvania, Ohio, Wisconsin, Great Lakes area. And it's we've gotten so many requests. We couldn't fill half of them on this time around, and this is a 3-month tour. We've gotten a lot of requests out in the West Coast, and we know we want to be plugged in over there as well. We have some folks out there already, but there's been all kinds of great community organizing in response to the fires in both Southern and Northern California, and we're looking forward to plug in with more folks that we didn't get to get on the tour this time around, but hope to go a second round in the fall of this year to the communities, many of the communities that we are unable to go to this spring 3-month tour that we're initiating in the near future.
Awesome. Any other thoughts just to the future of autonomous disaster relief or the tour itself or anything that Mutual Aid Disaster Relief as a group is working on? I know you all just published kind of a retrospective on the closing of the Autonomous Relief Center and Medical Clinic that was just kind of looking back on the project. But anything else you want to add?
So I would say, you know, at the same time that obviously our focus is these major disasters, but that's not where we stop. You know, we're also involved in responding to invisible disasters wherever we are in our home communities and even internationally. So, Sincere, he's in Cleveland right now, and he's, you know, in the absence of, you know, doing comms and other stuff for folks in Puerto Rico, he's folks in the projects, different community mutual aid survival programs there. Desiree, who's a medic and another co-founder, along with Sincere and many others of Mutual Aid Disaster Relief, she just got back from a trip doing refugee medic solidarity work in Calais with migrants over there. And so we're building the movement in the context of disasters. We know there's a space there for us to build something from below, but the goal is that we're able to create these mutual aid survival programs and meet our needs, meet each other's needs, come together as a community in ways that offer an alternative and are a counterbalance to the top-down institutions and state power. We saw in Puerto Rico, one of our teams, we've had about a dozen different teams go down there, and one of the first ones, they while they're doing autonomous medical work and trying to and successfully getting into the FEMA warehouses and getting the supplies out to the people, they were actually swatted. Somebody called a fake 911 call and said that they were our team down there was engaged in kidnapping. When the SWAT team showed up, they went down on the roof, broke through the doors and windows, and held everybody at gunpoint. And when they were doing that, they were asking folks about their politics. They were asking if anybody was with Antifa. They were asking if anybody has ever raised their fist. And we know that this is politically motivated repression. And we know this is going to happen because we're effectively building power from below, right, and offering a strategic alternative. This is how we build from below, by getting out of our little bubbles and responding to people's needs as they themselves. And together in that learning process, we listen, we ask, we are all contributing to each other's liberation and empowerment. And this is a threat to the established order. And so we expect things like that. But moving forward, we know that our relationships with each other is stronger than whatever repression comes at us from the state or the boundaries of the nonprofit industrial complex that we're trying to sidestep as much as possible.
Right. And we'll be posting the dates along with this podcast, but if you want, you can go to mutualaiddisasterrelief.org. And once again, the tour starts officially on March 3rd, according to the website, and it goes all the way till March 13th. And like you said, there most dates have two events, different workshops and presentations. So it's just awesome. I mean, do you have any plans to hit other parts of the United States in the future?
Yes, we're definitely going to do this in other parts of the U.S. What we're doing is every time we talk in one location, we're asking questions, we're listening, and we're getting feedback, and we're gonna. It's an iterative process, so we're learning as we go. Just as you know, we're all teachers, we're all students, we're all in this together. And we're going to be constantly refining our insights, and as we go. And hopefully in the fall we'll be talking. We're organizing that right now. Hopefully we'll be able to make an announcement over the next few months about potential fall tour in other locations, and that's still in the works. But we this isn't an end; it's only a beginning. And we'll definitely be visiting other communities over the next several months and several years as well.
Well, it's just so inspiring to see this happening and continuing. As difficult and as hard as these things that you're organizing around is, it is inspiring to see people taking on this work and doing such amazing things. So best of luck to you on the tour. Check out maddisasterrelief.org. Check out their Facebook for updates. Also want to plug your Instagram. There's some beautiful photos of stuff that people are building, across the U.S. and in Puerto Rico, wherever that people are at that are working on this project. Really cool stuff. If you want to see some awesome photos, check out their Instagram. We'll put some links of that in this post. But anything else you want to say in closing? Any other shout-outs or anything else?
Yes. So I went to New Orleans after Katrina. I got there in September after the storm. And I learned this, this way of doing things from Malik Rahim. I spent several months in New Orleans after Katrina. We have a lot to learn from Common Ground and the mistakes that were made. But that legacy, that Malik, continued, it was, Malik Rahim is a community in New Orleans, and melding his history, his legacy of community organizing in the context of survival programs that were meant to simultaneously meet people's immediate needs, simultaneously raising their consciousness. And there are survival programs and so that melded with our experiences of food not bombs, global justice, anti-FTAA, World Trade Organization, IMF protests, and street medic work. And it was a melding of movements. And that's one thing that we see as a strategic, way forward is this type of organizing. It cuts across, different lines that divided us before, and it unites disparate elements of our movements under a truly liberatory model of mutual aid, but also critique for in advocacy for long-term fundamental radical change, because we know that responding to disaster isn't enough. It's the root causes that you know we need to also confront. So at the same time that we're responding to Harvey, Irma, Maria, the floods in Baton Rouge or West Virginia, we're also supporting movements like Standing Rock with, you know, leveraging our resources to support movements like that in the Bayou Bridge resistance camp in Louisiana. So we as, you know, one part of a larger movement of movements, and we can win, and we're going to build an alternative from below, and it's powerful to be a part of it. It's beautiful, and we look forward to what we'll be able to build together.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on, and you know, let us know if there's anything else that It's Going Down can do to signal boost and amplify the tour or anything else. And you know, good luck to you on the road.
Thanks, and shout out to It's Going Down too. Thanks, you know, solidarity.